It is about questioning the process. It is questioning the controls, because a lot of time what happens is traditionally people have said that these are the ways controls should be established. We are in the world of AI now. The controls also have transformed. It's not the way we look at the maker checker as the way we used to look at it in the past. In one of my activities at Wipro, this is my first job ever, and maybe this was the birth of transformation for me as well. I was given the challenge of automating the entire incentive programs for sales executives. So what was happening at that time was the sales team basically was clocking in their numbers. They were to be paid incentives every quarter. It took a quarter to decide how much to be paid to each individual. So, you know, in terms of the gratification, people who did well did not see immediate gratification, and therefore there was a lot of morale concerns, you know, within the org, and a lot of computational issues, because of which you'd see very good salespeople leaving as well. So the entire activity was twofold. One is design a policy from an incentive program perspective, which would reward people for doing better, and ensure that it's automated so that they don't have to wait a quarter or two to get their money. You have to inculcate this as a culture. So let's say the CFO says that every quarter I'll incentivize the team who does the best innovation or the best transformation in the system. I think this, you'll drive that culture automatically. Recognition at a CFO CEO level are key drivers, you know, and people feel that you know, these things will get visibility.
Hi, welcome back to the next episode in Copa Talks, the ultimate CFO podcast brought to you by Blue Copa. Here we bring you unfiltered access to conversations with veteran finance leaders, covering key milestones and challenges in their journey through stories. One of the topics we at Blue Copa love chatting about is what we are speaking with Nishit today. Nishit Mehta is the head of finance transformation and one of the CFOs within the Flipkart Group, India's e-commerce giant. With exposure to transformation stories as early as 2005 with the management trainee program by Wipro, Nishit has been at the fulcrum of various transformation stories across AB Mauri, Cognizant, InMobi, and now Flipkart Group. Imagine chatting with someone who had front row seats to the evolution of transformation over the past two decades. Join me as we chat about Transformation 101, pros and cons, and its future. Let's go. Hey Nishit, welcome to the show. So glad to have you.
Hey Guru, glad to be here. Thanks for giving me the opportunity.
So just like with every other speaker, we would love to have your introductions done. So why don't you walk us through your journey since, you know, early days, probably about a couple of decades ago?
Sure. So Guru, basically, I started my journey with Wipro. This was my first ever role. And for Wipro as well, they were introduction of the management training program. They used to call it the cohort program. So it was part of the first cohort batch of Wipro. It was structured almost like a B school program, where, you know, other than doing your regular work, you also had to do projects and write examinations on different topics. So I think, you know, the kind of foundation I have, and if I look at it in hindsight, I think it's all started there. We didn't do our MBA, but I'm a chartered accountant, but I did a good experience of what a B school journey would be at Wipro. So the two rigorous years were about doing your regular work, doing projects at a group level, and also writing examinations on various topics. So topics like how currency evolved, how M&As are to be done, projects like how do you think Wipro should be structured entity wide, whether we should have IT and non-IT separately, things like So these are very interesting topics here, right? I mean, which every finance professional would want to know the journey of. So this was inculcated into the early days. Post Wipro, I moved to a company called AB Mauri. This is a company which is headquartered in London. It's a large conglomerate called the Associated British Foods. Just to give you a perspective, Twinings, the dip tea, which was the first dip tea we've seen in India, is part of the same group. Okay. That's so, this group, basically, the business which I was a part of was all around bakery ingredients. So, this was yeast, flavors, etc. What I was responsible here was internal controls. So, from Wipro, which is a more FP&A business finance heavy role, which I did there. Out here, I was responsible for internal controls and group FP&A. So, I went around Southeast Asia, looking at internal controls, looking at, you know, how the financials are reported, etc. Because this was about a group which had over 200 odd entities, and they had to consolidate. So every entity had a, and even within the division I was part of, in Southeast Asia, we had about seven countries. All seven countries use different ERPs. So it was all about how do you look at controls within those ERPs, convert them into financial reporting, which is required as per IFRS to be consolidated at a group level. So this was the challenge, and working with different cultures, Philippines, Malaysia, Vietnam, Pakistan, Sri Lanka, India, all of these countries were involved, right? So it was a great experience, along with tasting all the yummy cakes and bakery products which they used to bake. I was also, you know, getting into the entire, you know, internal controls. This was also when the Anti-Bribery Act was launched, and my additional responsibility then became on implementing the Anti-Bribery Act. Post that, I did a very small stint with Cognizant, a very similar role to what I did at Wipro. It was a very short journey there. Then I, you know, joined the interesting world of startups. This was with InMobi first. In InMobi, I started off with FP&A, then moved on to global business finance roles. In the entire journey, it is quite an interesting one because, you know, some of these companies I worked with earlier already had very, all of these systems set up, right? At InMobi, even the employee HRMS file was not done. So one of my activities in addition to what I was doing was every time an employee joins, weekly, I used to, you know, take the roster of the employees who have joined in the week and add them into, you know, my file, assign, take the employee number, assign a cost center, etc., all of this manually. And, you know, I just started, you know, respecting the other companies in terms of the systems and also the person who have probably developed the system years back, right?
Yeah.
So the kind of respect for them increased. In addition to, you know, doing your regular finance activities, we had to set up working with, you know, various teams, be it HR, be it, you know, strategy teams, be it tech teams, basic systems like HRMS, how your, you know, software for tracking your ESOPs, etc., all of this. So I think that's where I started, you know, thinking about how one can, you know, set up systems. I'm not saying everything was successful. There were failures, but you learn from those because you were put in a spot where you had to think about systems. One very good part of that journey was, you know, our CEO took a lot of interest in some of these areas. So one of the things I remember still while we were setting up HRMS for the entire org, what the CEO said is, you structure it in such a way that even 20 years later, the structure should not be disturbed. So the challenge given to us was to structure the entire tool in a way that, you know, whether you move from this tool to the other tool, your structure doesn't change. Your company structure doesn't change. So there is a certain methodology which you have to put so that you do not have a change in structure. While most of companies have adopted this, I think I found that later that companies had already adapted this structure earlier, but which I was not aware of. So, but I had to put that structure working with HRMS with the HR team as well and, you know, establish it. So that's where the journey started. Interestingly, one more challenge was put on to me during those days. I think everyone would have heard about the 2016, you know, funding, which was, you know, crunched in the ecosystem. and startups had to think about how innovatively they will create funds internally, become more profitable, etc.
Yeah.
So I think in InMobi our journey started much ahead because we kind of probably saw that this kind of a scenario would come, and we were preparing ourselves. But one of the things, again, I can quote this, our CEO said was, do not cut costs that it hurts the employee morale. So do what is required, but don't go, the full throttle. Because he's aware that when a finance, org works towards profitability, they kind of, cut corners everywhere. So this is another important learning I had that, irrespective of how things are, one has to ensure that, you do not hurt employee morale. Otherwise, what happens is people start thinking, right, is there something wrong with the organization? So that is another learning I had in my journey. While doing this, I was working directly with the CEO, driving our path to profitability. And we kind of announced profitability since July 2016. So it was a very proud moment for me of being part of a team which was involved in converting a loss-making company to a profit-making company, but just not profit-making, but sustainably profit-making.
Yeah.
So that was a very interesting journey which I had at InMobi. Then, came in Flipkart, which is where, I am for the last 6.5 years. I played multiple roles at Flipkart. I think, just the sheer diversity of roles I've played, I don't know if I can get this opportunity anywhere. I can, even when I'm speaking to you, I'm thinking of, the various roles I've played. I started my journey with being the head of FP&A at Flipkart. Then I was part of the business finance team where I was leading the smartphones category, which is the largest category of Flipkart. Post that, I got an opportunity of starting a small startup within Flipkart and being the CFO of that particular company, which is Flipkart and us. So I played a very different journey until now. While I thought everything was over, then another challenge came where I was asked to lead the entire transformation efforts, being part of the controller's org. And this was interesting because I've never done a controllership role ever in my journey. So this was the first. Frankly, I was a bit nervous when I was speaking to the group CFO who told me of this opportunity. I was a bit nervous because I was like, I've never done a controllership role. Leading transformation for controllers via controllers of the entire org in terms of the finance systems was something which was, extremely, sensitive. I mean, for me, it was like a very big responsibility thrown onto my shoulders, and I took it seriously. So that's where I am today, Guru. So this has been my journey over the last two decades.
Very diverse and very interesting. I have like a ton of questions to ask, but let me just say one for now. Sure. So this controllership focused transformation, if you want to call it that way. So how is it different from the rest of the other transformations? Is there anything in particular that you would want to share?
See, I think, interestingly, when I was in my startup journey and met a lot of CFOs in different startups, the term tech debt comes into picture, right? Where, you kind of work on a certain tech, release, and there is a lot of tech debt you accumulate because you would have done releases after releases, and then there is a time where you clean up the debt you've accumulated. So I think this is a journey where you could call it a tech cum finance debt which we had accumulated, which required a lot of transformation because, in terms of the agility, a lot of organizations tend to go agile in their journey towards the customer. But a lot of internal processes, need transformation. So this is that journey which basically is about looking at not only controllership, it is led by controllership, but I think in this entire journey, we're not only focusing on controllership-led transformation, but if we see any opportunity even to basically do transformations for a business finance role, for a business role, etc., we're actually touching upon those as well. So it's interesting that while it's led by controllers, we're actually working with tech teams across the organization And if you get an opportunity in this, where a few things can be sorted for the business team and the business finance teams, etc., we're actually working on that as well.
Got it. Interesting. Great. So I would love to know more about finance transformation, given that you've been, walking the journey for quite some time now. Let's probably start with the role itself. Can you help me understand how a finance transformation leader role is slightly different or majorly different from a head of finance or head of FP&A role? What is it that makes it different from the rest of these roles?
Oh, great question. I think, transformation typically, when you say it this way, I think every team does transformation in their own ways. The difference, I think, is in perspectives and in dedication. I think this is a more dedicated role. So I'm able to focus on transformation all through the day, while, for the rest of the team members, be it in the FP&A or as a CFO, because I don the hat of CFO as well. It's about, giving importance to transformation, automation, etc. But in a CFO role or a FP&A role, you're more driven towards automation than transformation. So that's what I wanted to call out, that it's a very perspective driven thing. Second, I feel it's a lot of, even from a constrained perspective, I think in this role, I'm having a very unconstrained thinking. I'm not thinking of any constraints. Being in FP&A, being in CFO, I would think, this transformation or automation might cost so much, might do this. So currently I'm actually going unconstrained in my thought process and then, putting the constraints later, which are being put on by those teams onto me. And then I'm working according to constraints. Right. So I think today dedication and constraint is one factor where I play a very different role as compared to the roles I played in the past myself of an FP&A as well as a CFO.
Got it. So there's quite a bit of unlearning and relearning, if you want to call it as well, right? So you might have to shift your perspective.
I think the bias which I had to work through is quite a lot. And I think I'm sure I still have a lot of, bias which is there, which I need to unlearn as well. But I think it's a lot of unlearning, learning. You're working towards a very process-oriented aspect in a transformation, especially led through controllers, versus an FP&A or in CFO role, I would not think about a lot of processes, but I would want to get things done which is more favorable to me in that role.
Perfect. Great. So let me just phrase it this way. Now you've been doing finance transformation for a while and you've accumulated a few skills. Now let's say tomorrow you want to start a transformation project, a small scale transformation project, and you're looking for someone, right? What is it that you look for in that person, or what gives away, okay, this person is probably ready to take lead a finance transformation project?
So I think the first aspect I would look for is questioning the status quo, right? I think a lot of us end up in a certain process, in a certain way of working, and do not question the status quo. When I say this, it's a very larger term. It is about questioning the process. It is questioning the controls, because a lot of time what happens is, traditionally, people have said that these are the ways controls should be established. We are in the world of AI now. The controls also have transformed. It's not the way we look at the maker-checker as the way we used to look at it in the past. So I think when I say questioning the status quo, I mean everything, right from questioning processes, controls, etc., And setting up a system which is, or at least the thought process of that person should be about how I can think today of what you might need tomorrow. That is what I kind of look at in a person.
Got it. Anything from a finance skill?
I think if someone is aware of what the business entails and how a process entails, and basic finance skills, I think, is there in everybody. I think that person yeah. should be able to do this kind of role.
Got it. Cool. Let's talk about, let's probably rewind a bit back and then go back to the tipping point when a finance transformation project gets birthed. In what point or in what moment do you think, you know, probably we've accumulated enough tech debt or financial debt for us to kickstart this transformation project? Or when does this idea get executed?
So I think it's about, you know, various aspects. It's probably not just one, but I think the tipping point for me, if you ask me, is the time when the customers of the finance team, be it the vendors who are not getting paid on time, be it customers who have problems with, you know, the way the invoices are, or they have clarifications required. And I'm saying this in a very generic way. It's not just pertaining to one company, but it's in a very generic way. So when a customer of the finance team, being the employee, be it the vendor, be it the, you know, customer, any of this starts facing quite a lot of concerns in the entire process, I think is when, you know, the tipping point of transformation is required. So when you see the NPS scores of all of these three teams going down towards, you know, towards the processes of an organization, I think that's when, you know, transformation is absolutely required.
Got it. Is it right for me to assume that most transformation projects are done for the internal benefit of the organization than the external benefit? Or am I assuming?
I think not, because when a transformation project takes birth, it's not that, you know, things have gone extremely bad. It's about things have gone worse than what you would want it to be. So it's just about, it's not about that things have, you know, kind of fallen or so. So I think it's about looking at, you know, not just financial processes, but this particular team basically works with so many players outside, inside. So it benefits maybe a good amount of people internally because a lot of their mundane activity becomes automated. But it also helps the external folks because tomorrow, if the person's ability internally becomes better, their productivity goes higher. And hence, I feel that a transformation journey basically leads to benefits across the organization, even externally, because your data is more refined. The ability for someone to do data analytics becomes better. The ability for someone to spend more time on a different activity becomes better. So I feel it kind of has a ripple effect across.
Got it. So while implementing these transformation projects, have you come across any high challenges or things that you could probably want to avoid?
I feel one of the things which I would want to definitely, you know, look at is basically how we can challenge the teams enough on thinking transformation. So a person who's doing a certain process in a certain way gets so used to the process in that way that it becomes difficult to even, you know, align that individual on, you know, a better way of doing the same thing. Because it's about a lot of things, right? The giving that person the comfort that your accounting will happen with all the accuracy, reliability, etc., even after transformation. Because in a transformation journey, finance-led, one is the process, one is systems, one is ERP, a lot of these things, right? And when this happens, it's about, you know, just ensuring that the person on the ground is comfortable. Else, post-transformation, I feel the amount of effort one has to put on change management will become very, very high. So I feel a transformation activity needs to be managed from a perspective of change management. How do you reduce the amount of change management, which is basically ensuring that everyone you work with or everyone who is your customer from a transformation perspective he's aligned to what you're doing and is taken along the process with you. So the transformation team for me is just not me and my direct team, but all the team members who are getting impacted by the journey, bringing them all together and then taking them along through that journey is what I would, you know, call a most successful transformation.
Got it. That brings me to another question that is on top of my mind. So how do you measure an ROI or the success of a transformation project? How do you this transformation project has been a success?
Sure. So in the short term, like I said earlier, for me, it's about how I can ensure that the transformation is having the least amount of issues from a change management perspective. My NPS scores become better with all of the customers I'm dealing with. This will be my short-term measure of success. My medium-term measure of success is every time new areas of work are being added on to to the process, the teams which are on the ground are able to think of how the systems should be set up so that, you know, they do not have any issues. The long-term measure of success is that everything you do in the organization is thought through end to end, where every process, every compliance, every customer facing activity, all three go hand in hand in every launch you do. So that I feel will be the long-term success, that you do not need a transformation ever.
Got it. I love the answer. Short, medium, long-term. Very well precisely told. Looking at success and failure of a transformation project, which is you know, again, a byproduct of the question that I was just addressing you with. Can you share a success story where a transformation perhaps led to a significant organization, thus making it grow 10x more or achieve something?
So I'll go back quite a few years. And thanks for asking this question so I can go back in time. In one of my activities at Wipro, this is my first job ever. And maybe this was the birth of transformation for me as well. I was given the challenge of automating the entire incentive programs for sales executives. So what was happening at that time was the sales team basically was clocking in their numbers. They were to be paid incentives every quarter. It took a quarter to decide how much to be paid to each individual. So, you know, in terms of the gratification, people who did well did not see immediate gratification. And therefore, there was a lot of morale concerns, within the org. And a lot of computational issues, because of which you'd see very good salespeople leaving as well. So the entire activity was twofold. One is design a policy from an incentive program perspective, which would reward people for doing better, and ensure that it's automated so that they don't have to wait a quarter or two to get their money. So I think it was a very indirect impact on the business, but once we got it automated, this was a very regional setup, Guru, just to give you perspective.
Okay.
You had this feet on street at every region who would go and make sales efforts, and you know, they expected returns, because these are guys who do not earn out of their salary, but earn out of their incentive, right?
Yeah.
So it was very important that, you know, they are motivated to do better. So we designed an incentive program, which basically said that as far as you're able to achieve and go beyond your basic targets, you'll be rewarded exponentially. I mean, we went to the extent, if I remember very well, it's about almost a couple of decades earlier. But if I remember well, it went up to 400% of their incentives as the kind of multiplier they could get.
Wow.
So the second thing was ensuring our systems, which is SAP, had all the data available so that the computation could happen in an automated manner. So after we launched this program and we launched the automation, I can tell you, I spoke to a few salespeople. They were not, you know, happy, because they did not trust that the systems could give them the data. And when it happened, the first time, I think we gave it a month and a half later, The second, we gave it a month later. And the third time is when we were able to give it almost live, which is quarter over. In the next payroll, you get your incentive. When that happened, it was a different, even the 1.5 months itself brought in a lot of motivation because you crunched the time by half.
Yeah.
And they saw that, you know, the efforts which people have put in will pay off. So they were, now were hopeful. We were able to clock numbers which were one of the best for that point in time. We went back 5 years. I think the growth which we achieved at that point in time was the best when I look at, you know, 5 year journey. And this, I think, all started with how a morale of an individual goes better. So it's a very simple transformation, but I'm just trying to say how a simple transformation can indirectly lead to, you know, morale boosting, which can then lead to growth in the organization.
Correct. When do you approach it? How do you approach it? And how do you, or why do you approach it?
So I feel, you know, my advice would be in two parts. One is for the past and one is for the future. My advice is to say that, you know, if you have a certain cleanup to be done, ensure you do it, because I feel the kind of gains, while they might be intangible today, you will see it in tangible benefits into the P&L very soon. So cleanup activity is required. Very classic example. Today, let's say you're running a business where you deal with multiple sellers who are all, you know, small time kirana stores, etc. Now, if you settle their money in the right way, you give them visibility of how they've earned their money, how the profits have been accrued, visibility on when the payment will come, and the payment comes on the day where you promise them that it will come. Again, it's about the same thing I spoke earlier, the morale which you will boost for these guys, and these guys will then work multifolds. Working capital is a very important thing for these guys. They rotate, they work on working capital, right? So for them, rotation is very important. Very classic example of how one can just make a small change in efforts in the finance organization to ensure that one of your customers / sellers on the platform are actually very happy with you, and then they will take the business ahead. Because once they trust you that, you know, their money is safe, I think it's only then about looking at how they drive business growth. So important is to clean up your past and also ensure that you motivate and incentivize your teams. And when I say your teams, it doesn't end at finance, but it's finance, business, tech, everyone, to think about how a system should be made in such a way that there is every process, every area taken care of. It's building processes in a way, and you have to incentivize them. I think most of them take these things for granted. Frankly, I was one of them. So I won't say anything to anyone else. But I think we take these things for granted. I think incentivizing the team to think about how a process should be set up from the start, and also incentivizing the team to do any small transformation. I feel, and I learned this from an individual who's a good friend, you have to inculcate this as a culture. So let's say the CFO says that every quarter I'll incentivize the team who does the best innovation or the best transformation in the system. I think this, you'll drive that culture automatically. Recognition at a CFO, CEO level are key drivers, you know, and people feel that, you know, these things will get visibility. So how visibility can be driven for teams, and ensuring that they, you know, these efforts are not gone wasted, will be very important, you know, from a culture standpoint. So I wanted to drive 3 points: past, future, and culture. These three will be the most critical pillars for driving any transformation journey.
What kind of future trends and technologies are you foreseeing in this finance transformation evolution in 5-10 years?
So I think there's a lot of buzz around Gen AI. I haven't seen much adoption in the finance field, but I think it'll be interesting to explore what Gen AI has to offer in the overall finance transformation, for sure. But I feel some of the areas which which is important for finance, be it system audits which people do, the basic tax reconciliation, account reconciliation. I think this takes a lot of effort, and it's also a lot of pain point. So I feel some of these basic things for sure can be, system automated. It's about how the Gen AI is going to help you, because reconciliation is always about looking at what one has done versus what the other has done. It's not just about entries. Yeah. It's about two people doing two things, the same thing in two different ways. I feel some of these, the finance ops and audit, which, we're speaking on continuous assurance in the audit field. Some of these areas, I feel, in the short term itself should get solved. In the long term, yeah. I think a lot of these, you spoke about it as well, about the financial health of the company. A lot of times finance works very closely with business on identifying risk areas, etc. So I think a lot of this, partnership which finance does, I think the key data messages, the kind of, triggers which you usually get by talking to people in a finance role, I think some of it the systems can help you in the future, where sure. finance teams can, start using a lot of these important triggers through technology, which you get. Classic example, I'll tell you, when you're negotiating, let's say you want to go and negotiate your margins with a certain organization, and a lot of that organization's data is available publicly, right? Most of the organizations you deal with yeah. can be public companies as well. Just a basic thing, if you can ask, you need an analyst today for doing this, but let's say you can ask Gen AI, let's say what's been the gross margin increase for that company in the last 5 years. And you just check yep. what's the margin increase which you have got as an organization from that company in the last 5 years. And yep. and your negotiation has a very valuable input to say that how you grown versus how I've grown for you. Right?
Yep.
That's one very basic aspect which can be done today. So these are just tidbits, but I think it's about playing with technology and seeing how much technology has to offer. Even in the past, there have been a good amount of technological changes. It's about adoption of those, and I think a good amount of yeah. like you rightly said, the finance team is also evolving with tech savvy CFOs, tech savvy finance teams, etc. And I think this is where finance as an organization is far, far more adaptive to technological changes than they were in the past. And I feel the next 5-10 years is going to be exploding with the kind of innovation.
So quickly busting a
I
myth,
feel the finance team can bring to the table.
Would love to hear your
just
thoughts
by
on
adoption of these
when you're purchasing a platform piece of technology. Understood. How open Understood. Are you folks, or when I say you folks, the finance leadership in terms of purchasing a trendy, futuristic, less adopted piece of technology as opposed to a proven piece of technology, given that the CFO office is evolving, how is it happening? I'm just curious about what the ground reality is.
So I think with more folks coming on to the leadership, it's also being looking to challenge themselves, adapting new technologies. I think people are open for more experimentation than they were earlier. So most of them have, like in the tech, you want to keep some moon. So I think the same thing in finance organization as well, where people are open to moonshots, people are looking at things. Partnering with tech has become very critical. So I think the exposure which finance team today has is far higher than what one had in the past. I come yeah. from a background where I was within the IT company, so I probably had a good amount of exposure. But if you're in a retail sector, you're in sectors where, you know, you hardly get to work with finance. But today, in most of the new age companies, you see tech has become, you know, a very important aspect. And, you know, with all these buzz happening on technology, you know, evolutions which are happening today in the market, I think more and more people want to adapt technology to make their life better and, you know, also be able to do more than what they're able to do today. So I feel that the teams are more open today than they were earlier, and I think more inquisitive as well.
Got it. I think that answers the question, Nishit. Following up with another question, how are such platform decisions made, with respect to a Gen AI or AI focused purchase, right? Is it more top down? Does the leadership think that AI technology might benefit the team and everything? Or is it more bottoms up where they see, okay, you know, there's a lot of people using this in a free version, or they're trying to use some version of it, and then, okay, no, I think we should probably get it across the board.
So I think, you know, it's a two-fold aspect. One is some tools are already being used, which have evolved AI into them. A classic example is, you know, a lot of these reporting tools today have adapted Power BI into their, you know, into their systems. So those areas, I think, are very local decisions where teams take, you know, the respective decisions for those tools, because one, they are not very expensive, and you know, second, they are already using them, and you just need to add a feature, you know, to them so that you can explore, you know, the AI features of that technology. But for the larger purchases where, you know, you're talking about, you know, putting an entire system into place, I think that's a more org-driven, you know, decision making. But I think smaller decisions for things which are not that expensive, I think, are being made at a local level.
Got it. Great. One last question, going to be a very controversial one. So,
go ahead.
What do you think, or when do you think finance transformation will suddenly cease to exist? What do you think is the point when you will say, okay, there's no more finance transformation needed?
To have a humorous answer, when business shutdown, transformation is not required. But but on a more serious note, I don't think, you know, I mean, like I said, transformation is not, you know, the way we say it. I think there is a lot of transformation happening at every team, every employee level. And I think that will always remain to happen. Every time we have a technology disruption which happens, the classic example is where people are moving from, you know, their physical infrastructure to information. So every time tech disruption happens, transformation happens. Every time you know, there is a need, like I said earlier, from a debt accumulation, if at all any, then there is transformation. Then, you know, you have new mindsets which keep coming in the form of, you know, recruits you do who are younger and younger, and they bring in transformation. I think a lot of transformation is driven by, you know, the young generation you hire. So the average age of the company also, you know, tells you how much transformation is going to be driven.
Got it. No, I think that's a very well put and a safe answer to this controversial question. So as long as, you know, there's tech evolution happening, but I think it holds true. As long as there's a technology getting developed on us being better version of ourselves, doing better version of our jobs, transformation does have a need to exist. We still have a gap to bridge the gap. Very well said.
Thanks, Guru. Thank you.
Great. So that brings us to the end of the conversation. It was a wonderful chat, Nishit. I think, you know, I've learned a lot about the perspective of finance transformation from the lens of someone who's walking the path. I think the audience will do as well. So thank you again for taking the time and spending the day with us. Thank you.
Thanks a lot, Guru, for the opportunity. It was really wonderful speaking to you. Loved the questions. It also made me go back in time. So thanks for that.
We really hoped it did. We wanted to bring down we wanted to walk down the memory lane and bring down some anecdotes and stories from your experience.
Sure. Thanks a lot.
Perfect. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye.